You're listening to The Brian and Gina Show, the official podcast of LA Magazine. Here are your hosts, Brian and Gina.
Hey, welcome to The Brian and Gina Show, the official podcast of Los Angeles Magazine. I'm Gina Grad.
I'm Brian Bishop.
And we are here today to tell you all about things that happen in Southern California. And a couple of those things are my boobs.
That's right. This is our continuing series on Gina's elective surgeries. Last week was removing bone out of her ear.
That's right.
And this week will be a breast reduction. I assume next week we'll talk to your doctor, did your rhinoplasty years ago?
I was going to say, if I can dig him up, I don't know if he's still around. That was north of 20 years ago.
I was going to say, who knows if that guy's still breathing?
But when you say elective, I mean, yes, it's certainly not a life-saving procedure. But let's just put it this way. Insurance, who loves to nickel and dime, said, you know what? This one's on us. So elective, but also like necessary. I mean, how many times in 9 years plus have you seen my chest, Brian?
In my dreams and reality.
Add them up.
Countless.
Thousands.
There should be an infinity symbol on the screen.
So if you were a claims adjuster, you'd say, you know what? We got this, right?
Understood. Actually, okay. All joking aside, this is a great guest. This is a great topic. I mean, I think
I'm excited.
When people outside of LA think of Beverly Hills plastic surgeon, mm-hmm. there's an archetype, right? That's like an archetype, even a meme that's like in movies, on TV, et cetera, et cetera. And we're going to talk to the real deal.
Yeah. And, you know, does she drive an exotic Italian sports car? I don't know.
She does now.
But, you know, we've all seen it, like you said, in movies and in, you know, stereotypes. We got the like the slick haired doctor doing his thing. And like one
Dr.
thing I
Slotnick.
Love. That's exactly right.
Sorry, that's a Spaceballs reference. Timely.
Indeed it
probably
was.
Watching.
It's so funny because we keep watching that over and over again. So that ain't lost on me.
That's a good decision.
But one reason I went to her, and, you know, sorry to be genderist, but I wanted to go to a woman. There were many qualified men that do this kind of surgery, but I wanted to go to a woman. At the time, she also worked at a place where all the surgeons were women. And I kind of just loved that. She's now on her own. Dr. Elise Min, who is now obviously the head of Elise Min Plastic Surgery in Beverly Hills, but she's incredible. And as much as she's had to answer my questions about like my body and like, is this going to happen? What about this? What do we do? I'd love for her to answer just general questions that have
sure.
nothing to do with me.
Absolutely. I'm curious. I'm curious about a lot of things, but especially like how much like does being a woman in that field, a female doctor, I mean, like yeah. factor into your business? I imagine a number of women. I must admit that I took a walk down her Instagram. She posts a lot of videos.
Yeah,
super cool. Helpful, super explanatory. And along with breast reductions, breast augmentations. She does like labiaplasties, right? And
yeah.
I imagine if I'm a woman, that would be something I'd be more comfortable discussing and physically doing with a woman
yeah.
doctor than I would with a man.
At the very least for the initial chat.
The consultation.
Like, yeah.
And by the way, how dare you women have the temerity to like question, you're like a female masseuse or a guy masseuse. Works both ways, baby.
In that way, yeah, you did take a lot of heat on that last week. So
that's
I
right.
hear ya. But yeah, for the initial consultation, it's, I don't know, let's get a look at that thing. You're like, ew.
That's kind of part and parcel to the whole thing, right? I got to see what I'm dealing with here.
Exactly. And as you know, and as we you know, as a friend and as a co-host and as a person I've worked with for many years, I'm pretty an open book about this
sure.
stuff. And there was right after my surgery, I said, this was when there was another wave of like revenge porn, like hacking scandals, like people hacking mm-hmm. into people's phones. And I said, good, do it. Good luck. And I hope you're eating when you open it. Cause it was nothing but just open wounds and scar tissue.
Oh, poor
so
Andy.
Yeah. But according to Dr. Min, all normal and also all healed up beautifully.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah, can't wait to talk to her about that. But let's talk weekend first.
Let's do it. My mom was in town, so I had an excuse to do some touristy stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, which, by the way, so I passed by. We took her up to Malibu, passed by your beloved Malibu seafood. But we actually avoided our normal haunts up there in Malibu and all the way to Paradise Cove. Are you familiar?
Oh, wow.
Are you familiar with the
I'm familiar Paradise with Cove? It. I haven't been there since years. I mean, when I would come visit L.A. with my dad.
So I haven't been there since ever. So my mom, ironically, had been there with her boyfriend. Oh, wow. She's like, oh, this place is great. Let's go. And we went to a Paradise Cove Cafe. Highly recommend. It was probably the closest I've experienced to like touristy Hawaii out here in LA.
Oh.
Like there's a restaurant portion to the Paradise Cove Cafe, but then there's a backyard portion where it opens up right to the Pacific Ocean, feet in the sand, tables and chairs in the sand. And you are doing like, you're doing like the old Lahaina, feet in the sand thing.
That's exactly what I was saying.
It was a sunny day. It wasn't a warm day, but in LA these days, they vacillate wildly.
Yeah.
So we'll take what we can get. And it was lovely. I'll tell you what the real treat was for me. Not just, of course, seeing my beloved mother. Sure. I looked at the menu and it was like afternoon. I'm like, I'll have a beer. And I looked at the beer menu and right there at the top, it says Angerstein. Now, I don't know if you're aware, Angerstein, a beloved brewery out of San Francisco, closed, like ceased operations last year. They were owned by Sapporo. They were bought semi-recently by the Sapporo company, who wasn't making any money off this very niche craft beer and decided to shutter things up.
Wait. Why do you buy? Why does a beer empire buy a niche beer company and say, we're not making enough off of this word of mouth, little tiny beer that some people love?
Yeah, it's got cult status. I don't think it's widely distributed outside of California. I don't say the Bay Area. I found it pretty easily down here in LA, but outside of that, who knows?
Shocked. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, I do feel like there might be, I know for a fact that there's like some tech bros who are trying to like, buy the place and restore it to its former glory. Whatever. Point is, they haven't produced any beer in several months, much to my chagrin. On the menu, and I'm like, well, this must be an old menu. They must not have updated the whatever. So I say to the server, I'm like, hey, it says Angerstein right here. Do you have Angerstein? He's like, yeah, pretty sure we do. I'm like, I will take one Angerstein.
Take one stale Angerstein, please.
And there was a stale Angerstein. I don't know if Gary has a picture. It's not that important. There it is.
Oh, wow.
Maybe the last Angerstein in existence is right there in my hands. Freezing cold. The date was July of last year, so your mileage may vary in terms of what you're expecting. But if you're unbeknownst to me, hankering for a little hit of Angerstein, head on down to the Paradise Cove Cafe. They got freezing cold bottles,
and they ain't making any more.
As far as I know, they're replenishing the supply. But that was a nice treat. It was a nice day, and we did all sorts of other little stuff. But that was the if you're in town from out of town and looking for a nice like beachside. Honestly, frankly, the prices are outrageous. You know what I mean? The nachos,
you're paying for the sand.
The nachos are $25, something like that. But considering you're like, paying for the sand, you're right there on the ocean, right there at the feet in the sand. It's a wonderful atmosphere and good for tourists, especially if you're expecting that experience.
Right. And we've said that about how many places up and down the coast, in Venice and all kinds of places.
There's no bargains to be had up there.
Oh, no. God, no. Everything's probably microwave for all we know. And I don't know. But it doesn't have to be good. It just has to be touching sand.
That said, the $25 nachos and the $26 taco plate that I got were actually pretty good. For what they could have been, they were pretty good.
Oh, that's great. And when I think of, now I actually could be wrong. When I think of Paradise Cove, are we talking up like Zuma Beach area?
Yeah, past okay. Pepperdine, like it's pretty far up there.
Haven't been there in years. So that's actually, if I ever see the line wrapped around the building at Malibu Seafood, which I often do, I'll just keep driving north.
Yeah, we got in no problem, no reservations or anything. In fact, when the weather's nice, of course, the sand is the way to go. Sure. That said, the inside of the restaurant was a ghost town. You could have your pick of any table you wanted.
Yeah. And it is off the beaten path. I mean, it's not in a densely populated area. It's a surfer. It's a surfer.
You have to take a little left at Paradise Cove.
Right.
So it's not on the highway. You got to go down a quarter of a mile or something.
Okay, great. So let's all put that on the list. And there's nothing, tourist doesn't have to be a bad word. You know, there's stuff that obviously gets a bad rap for a reason. But when you're talking about like tourist stuff, all we mean, unless we're making a face while we say it, is just a great, a reason to visit LA, a reason to visit Southern California.
Totally. Like if you have as many people, you know, transplants as they are, have family, friends from out of town.
Yeah.
In for a weekend or whatever, and they want to have that LA Malibu beach experience. This is where you should dial up.
That's great. And that was Friday?
That was Saturday, actually.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
So that was the highlight. Everything else was kind of, mom brought down a stack of DVDs that are home movies. So I'll be going through those. And posting anything. I'll bring it to the show if I find anything wonderful.
And do you have a way to watch said DVDs?
I do have a remote USB DVD player for my laptop, yes.
I might need to borrow that because I have told Darren Bousman no less than a dozen times I have to see Repo, his like scary opera.
Oh, yeah, the genetic opera.
And he finally gave me a DVD and I was so excited and I run home and I just stare at my surroundings, my DVD list.
Yeah,
DVD
what to do with this?
Which I do. By
the way, I apologize for being a little bit late to the show. This little friend here made an appearance in my kitchen. He's tiny. He had to be escorted outside.
Okay, so that's a baby mini Godzilla that he's holding up.
That's a
lizard.
Yeah,
it's a lizard.
He was cute. He scampered. He was scared. He was more scared than I was.
That's what they always say. That's he scurried. Right. I bet
he did. He had to be. Encouraged. I may have put my foot down near him, but
did you sweep him out with a broom or anything?
No. He just kind of ushered
happy
him
to leave. Wow. The way. It would be in this house with me and my husband and my stepson an absolute 5-alarm fire reaction.
Why?
Because my son is very trepidatious of critters. And my husband and I go back and forth having to balance each other out. So if I'm freaking out, he has to act brave and kill a cockroach. If he's freaking out, which he never would do, I am suddenly the calm one, which of course has never happened.
Sure.
If a lizard came sauntering in, it would be over.
I'm glad we brought this up. I brought it up because there's a hierarchy, I feel like, of like creepy crawlies like in the house.
Yeah.
Like cockroaches, maybe the worst. Outside of like something, unless you're in the desert and you have like a scorpion or something, which does happen. But
yes,
like they can do damage. They're dirty. They spread pestilence. In the case of a scorpion, it could sting you.
Yeah.
Lizards, I feel like, is on the opposite end of the scale where it's like, hey, this cute little guy just trying to get warm. He can do no damage. He cannot hurt you anyway.
You're intellectualizing it perfectly. It's not that. You're absolutely right. But it's the context. When it's literally on the other side of a 2.5-inch door, it's beautiful. It's exotic. It's adorable. It's nature. If it's out right here by the washing machine, it's full chaos. Because it's like, think of like seeing something little, but imagining it really big. It's like, it's just out of context. It shouldn't be what it is.
I feel like a fly is like mid-level baseline. It's annoying.
Yes.
It's dirty, et cetera, et cetera. But whatever.
Well, can't like
harm
whatever.
You that much outside of getting you a little bit dirty, I suppose. Mosquitoes, worse than that, they can obviously spread. You know, mosquitoes are the most deadly animal in the world.
That's what I understand from what the Zika and the West Nile.
Yeah, just spreading all sorts of bloodborne illnesses.
Right.
Spiders. I like spiders. I think
I don't mind spiders.
Elegant creatures.
I agree. Yeah. In fact, when we had a cleaning, you know, the one time we had a cleaning crew come, I asked them to please leave the spider alone in my bathroom. And yeah, I think it was just muscle memory for them to ignore
that. That's the poor man's exterminator right there. The spider in the corner. Wasps, any kind of like wasp animal, like that's bad news.
Yeah. Yeah. I like spiders.
That'll hurt you a lot.
But cockroaches, I think they're called, because I had to look them up when I lived on Miracle Mile, the American cockroach, which is so big you could put a saddle on it and I think it flies.
Oh,
those,
my.
I would run screaming out of my apartment and someone else in the apartment building would have to come deal with it, because that shit ain't going to happen for me.
Gary, I'm going to put you on the spot. If you can maybe find a picture somewhere of a Jerusalem cricket. Are you familiar with this?
I've heard of it.
There was a dead one outside of our back door, so we know it was in or around our house. And I'm like, what on earth? This is not one of God's creatures. And it is terrifying. I don't know that it can do much damage, but it was horrifying.
No, this was born in the seventh circle of hell.
Yeah, yeah. It is meant to terrify you. Visually, I don't know what kind of damage it can do.
Yeah. And for all you seafood lovers, not unlike a shrimp.
Yeah, it looks like a large, yeah, crustacean.
Yeah. And you know, here's the thing that for me differentiates whether I'm afraid of it or not. Does it have antenna? I don't fuck with antenna.
See, for me, it's like, is it mobile? Like, can it fly?
Yeah.
Can it like go above me, get in my hair, as it were?
Right. Sure. Yeah.
Moths,
yeah. Those things
annoying,
are not cool.
Who cares?
These look like a cross between bees, beetles, cockroaches, and scorpions. Yeah.
Yeah,
and they're huge.
That's pretty much it.
Wow. Look at that thing. Okay. So Google that and play along with the home game, because that is frightening. And remember our former friend of a former show, Dominic Moynihan.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Who is obsessed with insects.
Loves creatures.
And his favorite like creature on earth is the ant. I bet he has some thoughts about the Jerusalem cricket. Maybe he should come on and just talk insects with us.
Yeah. Well, Gary, go out to Dominic Moynihan's people with the express no interest in his acting career. No Lord of the Rings questions.
No lost
questions.
Uh-uh.
All insects.
I think he'd be down, actually.
That's right.
I think he would like that. Ayahuasca.
It'd be funny if we can get Dominic Moynihan to be our insect correspondent.
I don't think the chance is zero.
Oh, no. He's game. I know that he'll venture out on the shows.
Yeah. So something to think about.
Sure.
Well, that's quite a weekend right up until this very moment that you just had. And that's why he was about 30 seconds late to signing on to do this. But I did not know it was reptile related.
It was lizard escort related.
Wow. Okay. Well, I teased last week that I was going to be doing something kind of insane on Friday, and I did. And if you don't
tease that even more. Sorry.
Okay.
This is my ADHD. I'm interrupting something important or something stupid.
I already took Ritalin, so I'm good.
Good. Keep a pin in that. Okay. Came home last night. There was a caterpillar, or what appeared to be a caterpillar, hanging vertically by what I assume is its posterior from the ceiling, as we call it,
okay,
the top of our porchway. The stucco part of our porchway. I don't know if he's on his way to making like a chrysalis to become a butterfly, or if that's just, no pun intended, how they hang out. But he was like, you know, full on dangling from his ass over our porch.
He's probably making a little cocoon, right?
He didn't appear to be moving, but he was. Oh. He had stuck himself there.
Well, when did this happen?
12 hours ago.
Okay, you should check after the show and let us know if there's like a alien like cocoon. He's leaving, or he's looking now. I don't.
I'm leaving right now. He's still there.
Okay, is he?
Nah,
if you can,
that's not worth.
This is a. This is some salacious and
this is super local news.
Okay. Anyway, Jesus Christ. Amazing. Please keep us posted.
Okay.
So I went somewhere Friday where you will, one would find a plethora of bugs and outdoor critters and insects of all kinds, snakes.
Oh yeah.
Wildlife. I'm going to need you.
Your social media. Some sort of course.
Because I was going to have you Google it so you weren't totally confused. A girlfriend's birthday, our friend Lindsay was having her birthday, and Becky, who always comes up with something crazy, said, do you want to go to this place called Skull Canyon with us? And I said, sounds creepy. I'm in, without checking
what it was. And you got the word no up before she finished the sentence.
And I said, I don't know what, I go, where did you find this place? Targeted Instagram ad. So you know what? There Instagram, sometimes you get it right. So we went to this place called Skull Canyon in Corona, but the middle of nowhere. Nowhere.
Okay. And I mean, Corona is kind of the middle of nowhere, but then you're
in the middle of nowhere inside the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, sure.
This is a giant behemoth sky gym.
And it does look large.
It's crazy. It also, they do zip lining and stuff, but they are like this eco amusement park. I don't know how else to describe it. Well, I guess I should go to the website.
Like an obstacle course or like a fun house built into the tree. It was as though the Ewoks designed a
yes. Yes, exactly. It's called Skull Canyon. It is a sky gym, they call it. It's apparently a member of the Association for Challenge Course Technology and a member of the Professional Ropes Course Association. Neither thing did I know exist. So you climb, hang, jump, pull on either a 14-foot, like a 20-something foot, or a 40-foot course. And you're tethered in with a wire above you at all times. So in fact, you can't even get, there's these little like lanes and these little metal circles, and you have to like finagle your hook around so the next person can get by you. And it's like a little intricate for someone who's not into like abstract learning. Yeah, little kids I would pass would fix mine for me. It was crazy. It's either an hour and a half. We paid for the one where you could go all the way to the top. But here's the problem with that. It's not like I'm going to take a sky bridge and leisurely stroll. Oh, no, no, no. In my personal opinion, because I don't know if they market it this way, but the higher you go, the harder the obstacles are. Mm. And that was a hard no from me, dog.
This was a lot of upper body work, I'm assuming.
Lindsay and Becky went right to the top because they're spider monkeys. I am earthbound. So that's, I was right. Like, I'll do the 14 feet one. It is so much upper body. There were times where one of them would just be dangling in the middle of a course. And I'm like, are you okay? Do you want me to get someone? No, I can't breathe. I can't
take a break. Plus the altitude out there.
It was crazy, but it was so much fun. Tons of kids on that first course, or not if I'm trying to sound cool, but there was a lot of kids.
Sure. And I imagine your doctor, your surgeon would not recommend this post-op.
No, you're just going to want to wait a couple months. But you know who I did think about?
Mm.
Your wife and daughter.
Really? Oh yeah. They'd probably love it.
Now, I don't know if Tessa hits the weight requirement. You have to be at least 60 pounds. She's probably not there yet.
God, she's surpassed that years ago.
Oh, good for her. It's all muscle mass.
That's right.
But she and your wife would love this. I mean, if you have like that kind of adrenaline junkie kid, which I do not.
Tessa would love it. Yeah, Tessa would dive into this.
It was incredible. There's like, again, you're tethered in. And do you want to like fall and dangle and embarrass yourself? No, but you're not going to get hurt. You are tethered into this thing. But there's, you know, balance beams and logs and ropes and nets and all kinds of things. And it was really fun. We woke up the next day like, you know, the 40 pluses.
Sure. Regretting some decisions.
Just sore.
Yeah.
And felt like we got in like a mild car accident. Totally worth it though. So much fun. And I have to say, I have never heard of this restaurant. I assumed it was a chain, and that has since been confirmed. I feel like Gary would know this because he's like, I don't know, maybe it's an OC thing. I don't know. We were starving afterwards. And we're like, well, what should we eat? Oh my God, we could eat a horse. Have you ever been to a Texas Roadhouse?
Oh yeah, they serve horse burger. Texas Roadhouse. No, I
they most certainly do not. It is my new favorite chain.
Really?
Okay.
Is there one closer than Corona?
I did not see one closer than Corona. And it might have been Rialto. I wasn't totally paying attention. But it was, you walk in, there's giant American flags and steers. And I was like, sure. And they used to have let you throw peanut shells on the floor. But after COVID, apparently that's a no go. But you walk in and the first thing you see, and you would respect this, a giant refrigerator case of big, giant ribeyes. And you can pick yours and tag it like a lobster tank.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's the one I want.
All the girls did. I did. And then I got cold feet about eating a 20 ounce ribeye and changed it to a 12 ounce. But I love this place. I mean,
even 12 ounces is pretty substantial.
I brought most of it home, which is not like me. I'm usually a part of the clean plate club, but I'm trying to like back off some of that. But the food was awesome. I did the Caesar salad and the steak. I did have a bite of the buttered corn and the loaded potato that they ordered. Delish.
Oh, nice.
Service was awesome. The Diet Coke was on point.
Was it like they have the giant, was it like Texas where the giant drink coolers just covered nice? You grab it, you reach in and grab your drink.
No, but I would have liked that too.
Okay. That's a real thing. I've had barbecue in Texas and that's the thing out there. They just have these giant coolers and they're covered nice and you reach and grab your drink.
I mean, remember, it is a chain restaurant.
Sure.
They can afford the fountain drink, but I hear you. And then I'm so mad that Lindsay, she was going to get a scoop of ice cream for her birthday. We were so full at the end of it. She said, please, I don't want to waste it. Let's cancel that. But thank you. Well, did not know it came with a show because somebody else had their birthday and the entire staff comes and they say, dude, I am down with the Texas Roadhouse. Gary says Corona's the closest and everything east of that. So they have Oceanside, San Diego, but I left my heart at the Texas Roadhouse.
I'm going to have to find some locations when I'm traveling because this sounds wonderful.
It was great. So it was a really fun day. Then got back. We have our dog sitting, this little monster.
Oh,
so
that's right.
Grabbed the kid, grabbed the dog, went to the dog park for 2 hours, which is like my favorite place. And I love the dog park. I would go even if I didn't have a dog there, but that looks weird. They would judge, right?
Unless you get lost in the crowd, that's nice. But it would be a lot alarming just to have this person sitting and watching, taking pictures.
There would be pictures.
There would be.
So Saturday was Boykins. By the way, Kid Boy is also Boykins. I think we've talked about this before. There was a basketball player named Earl Boykins, which I was not aware of. So now he's just, because he was Kid Boy and then he was Boy Kid. Now he's called Boykins.
Okay.
His first soccer game. I'm going to tell you the score and you tell me how good you think the goalies were.
Okay.
5-5 tie.
For little kids, that's good.
I was going to say the goalies were out to lunch.
Yeah. As they say, Gina, the goals aren't scored on the goalie. They're scored on the defense.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We went to celebratory Denny's lunch afterwards and we had that exact conversation. It was really, really fun. And then I just have to, our guest is here. But I have to say Sunday night was great because Andy had two basketball games. So that meant it was Kid Boy Lady Night. Went back to the dog park and then came home for what is now his favorite show, The Old Twilight Zone.
How interesting. Tess is getting into the parent trap, the Lindsay Lohan parent trap.
Which I think in a way is like Children's Twilight Zone because that's the kind of stuff they do.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, so I have a list of all the ones we watched so far. On a future show, can we go through some of those?
Yes, because I'm not well versed. So you will describe and rate.
All I know is the first three notes of the theme song were enough to send me screaming up the stairs in my childhood home and hiding in my parents' closet because I was terrified of the music, as you're
that's
supposed
great. To be. That's great.
And now, like, we're watching him, and I'm afraid because I have PTSD, and he's laughing at, like, the gremlin on the wing of the plane.
Sure. Yeah, it's old-timey to him.
But it's still so good.
Yeah, they're classics for a reason.
Let's do get into those on a future show and talk about the 80s movie, which he really wants to see.
Sure. Yes, and also a preview to our next episode. Tessa is having her first Little League practice later today. She joined the team. 14 hours ago when a friend texted us and be like, hey, our son's playing, but there's not enough players on the team. Does Tessa want to join? She'll be the only girl, but does she want to play? And Tessa's like, yeah, I do. So we went to Big Five Sporting Goods last night, got her a pink bat, pink glove, and pink cleats. And she is ready to tear those boys up.
Yeah, she's going to hit the homers in style as only she can. I can absolutely see her like stealing home in a tutu because she's both. She's got it all.
Oh, yeah. I think she has her rainbow visor from tennis ready to go. Like
100%.
I think I upset Chris. I know our doctor is here, but let me just say real quick. I think I may have upset Christy on the short drive to a Big Five Sporting Goods when I said, now, Tessa, you are going to be the only girl. So there's going to be a lot of boys with like black cleats and black gloves. And I know how much you love pink. And mm-hmm. I think you should do whatever you want, but just know you might be the only one with a pink bat or glove or whatever. Sure. And she's like, yeah, yeah, I got it.
Oh, sweet.
We're off to the races.
And knowing this girl, I'm sure she's going to be decked out in her finery and her finest jewelry too, like Alex and Ani.
That's right.
Hey, everybody, what's up? It's Gina Grad. And when you're searching for the perfect piece of jewelry, it can be hard to find a brand you trust. Alex and Ani has been creating meaningful jewelry for over 20 years, designing pieces that connect you with all of life's important moments. With an emphasis on value, there is truly something for everyone. They've recently launched their Everyday Collection. I could not love it more. These pieces are made from stainless steel and an advanced water-resistant plating method that doesn't tarnish. It has the look of real gold. It's beautiful. I love these pieces because they feel so classic, but they have so much versatility. Alex and Ani are also featuring some gorgeous pieces that I have right here, like Black Lotus, this gorgeous Black Lotus charm necklace, and their Stay Wild pendant, and their Wings of Protection necklace that have a classic and vintage feel. See that? And of course, you can't forget their signature bangle bracelets, which I'm also wearing. And I have a lot of their stuff. I have the numerology bracelets. I have the hula dancer to commemorate a meaningful trip I took to Hawaii. From classic to bold statement pieces, Alex and Ani makes it easy to sprinkle your personality into each piece or make a truly meaningful gift for someone you care about. Meanwhile, you can take comfort in knowing that you're shopping with a socially conscious brand, as Alex and Ani has donated over $60 million to nonprofits worldwide, connecting fashion and philanthropy in an easy, fun, affordable way. Right now, Alex and Ani is offering our audience 20% off. So check their gorgeous collection out at alexandani.com and use the promo code MEIDAS. That's M-E-I-D-A-S at alexandani.com. Use that promo code at checkout for 20% off your order. Come and get something beautiful.
I'm Chelsea Ranieri, the host of The Zest, Orange Coast Magazine's official podcast, where I interview successful and notable people who have ties to Orange County. Listen to the stories of the lives and careers of guests such as iconic designer Paul Frank, Revolve's Risa Girona, and cooking show host Salma Dada. Subscribe right now to The Zest on YouTube and on all audio podcast platforms at The Zest.
All right, we are back with somebody that is very important to me personally and very important to a lot of patients personally. Dr. Elise Min, who has her own practice, Elise Min Plastic Surgery, who did my breast reduction, and I would let her do whatever she wanted to me, and that might be in our future. I don't know. Hi, Dr. Min.
Hello, Gina and Brian, thank you so much for having me. This is very sweet of you guys to host.
You are
thank
so
you.
Welcome. Thank you. Yeah, this is the first like high class like Beverly Hills surgeon we've had. So
yeah, right. That's hopefully the last. Hopefully she's our correspondent, exactly. Dr. Min. Good to see you up and around, recovered from what I assume was an arduous procedure with Gina's breast reduction.
Gina was fantastic in her just surgery preparation, the actual process, and afterwards, she was just honestly like stellar patient.
Joke, of course, but I told Gina earlier, I took a walk down your Instagram page. Very helpful, by the way. Oh, give out your Instagram handle if you would.
Oh, it's Dr. Elise Min.
Wonderful. E-L-I-S-E, Min, like man, but Min.
Am I in? Perfect. A lot of good information on there, especially for me, or I assume prospective patients who don't know what a lot of this entails. Can you give us just a general overview of what happens when someone like Gina or in Gina's position comes into your office and is like, I'm having the worst back pain, you know, that this is killing me. What can you do to help?
Yeah. So for my office, you'll actually get plugged in with a conversation with my patient care coordinator, whose name is also Gina.
Oh, it is.
And she will usually kind of educate the patient on what the process sort of looks like. And once they kind of get a better understanding of it, then they'll come see me for a consultation. So it's their second time being able to hear kind of lots of details that go into it. And then during the surgery, during the initial consultation, we talk about sort of what the patient is hoping for, what brought them to the consult. And then I would have a chance to examine them, examine their bodies to really see, can I offer something that actually fits their actual hope, or if it's something that's not reasonable. So that's kind of the main consultation. And then we also kind of see, do we jive? Does the patient and the physician kind of make a good team? And if that's good to go, then that's when the patients would then go think about scheduling. And then once it's scheduled, I would see them again one more time during a pre-op visit, where I go into more nitty-gritty details of how to prepare for the surgery that's coming up, what to have at home for post-op recovery. And after that, the third would be surgery day. And then after the surgery day, I would see the patients in that post-op follow-ups.
Yeah, she doesn't just say, well, good luck to you. I mean, in my case anyway, I was there a lot and you were very available. So thank you for that.
Or it sounds like what happens a lot in LA, which is you see the team, you know what I mean? Like
right,
you see an understudy, if you will. But no, with Dr. Elise, you get the real deal.
Well, and Brian, I imagine you've been through that where you don't see the surgeon until it's time to do something. Brian has a tumor he's had for many years, and he's dealt with Cedars and hospitals a ton. And I imagine that you also get a lot of the crew.
Yeah, Cedars is the tip of the iceberg. I mean, I've gone through so many medical facilities and physicians and whatnot that, yes, you often end up seeing the team as opposed to the doctor that you want to see, whether it's physical therapy or rehab or surgery or whatever. I know we're veering a little off Dr. Elise's specialty here, but yeah, Dr. Elise has a little more hands-on, as it were.
In my opinion. And I want to go back to what you said about making sure that you are tempering the expectations of the patient. I can't tell you how many times I've told people this, if I'm even remembering it right. I don't know. You'll correct me. But that I love my boobs. Thank you, Dr. Mitt. But she made it very clear to me that you don't get to go from like a triple Z or whatever you are to like an A. It doesn't work that way. A doctor can only take you down so small before it's possible you would lose your nipples. Is that correct?
You're remembering a lot of details still.
Good for you. Really stuck with me.
And that's very important. Breast reduction especially is a pretty safe surgery compared to other surgeries out there in terms of what could be the worst thing. And it would be sort of the nipple death, like you talked about.
Right,
and a lot of patients having very, very heavy breasts, they want to go as light as possible. And for some women, that's still wanting to look feminine. Others, it's like, get me as small as possible.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you do want your natural nipples with the sensation, alive nipples. And with that, there's a limit to how much tissue I can remove where you still have good blood supply and good nerve sensation to your nipples to still maintain what you had before surgery. So with that in mind, it's impossible to get anybody to an A cup, no matter where they start. It's going to be somewhere in potentially as small as largest B cup. To most patients who start very large, where the breasts are touching the groin, those patients really, the smallest we could go is sort of full C, small D.
Oh, but, the mind floods with questions. Go ahead, Gina.
But wait, let's also, and I want to make sure this is all, feel free to just correct me until the cows come home with all this. But even if you are fuller than you thought you would be or that you hoped in your little imagination, it comes with a lift. Okay, so you're going to be fine, whatever you get. You're
that
never going to wear an underwire again.
Every breast reduction patients do get a breast lift at the same time. So that is one additional perk of having smaller breasts is also you have a lifted, cuter breast.
It's
okay. Just so Gary, do you have a heart out today? Because we could be here for a couple hours. The question.
I mean, okay, I might have a surgery to get to.
Many questions. Number one, I know, speaking of cup size, I the one thing I was surprised to learn via your videos, Dr. Elise, was cup size is not universal. I didn't realize they differed based on manufacturers of bras. Like, I thought there was just a semi-universal measurement, but apparently not.
Oh, sweet, sweet Brian.
Oh my gosh. So
the
many
ones that I buy, Gina, are pretty universal.
So there is, you know, Victoria's Secret is a common brand that a lot of women who wore bras in the 2000s and 2010s
oh, yeah.
shopped at. And I joke that that's a brand for skinny girls, because skinny girl would go in with an A or B cup size breast, and then they come out being like, oh, I'm actually a C cup. And
yeah.
themselves. And then there are a lot of my friends who had larger breasts, and they come out frustrated if I can't fit into anything that Victoria's Secret can offer. And that's because their sizing is kind of geared towards their population they're trying to market to. Right. And then there are different brands that are also not marketing to that group. And it's more sort of comfort and just very much varies. It's a subjective measure. And it's sort of fascinating in terms of how a lot of women think that, oh, everybody wants to be a C cup, and the C cup they think is like a unit, like two dimensional size,
sure, but sure.
isn't. Another example, Brian, is for somebody who's a 32 C cup. So 32 is actually the ribcage distance around mm-hmm. right below the breast. So 32 C cup is supposed to be actually similar to a 34 B cup. So for somebody who doesn't want that wrap below their breast to be not too tight, they want something mm-hmm. a little bit more comfortable, then they're essentially a B cup in that 34, and it's the same person with the same breast.
Yeah, it's a lot of math. And then we get into words that I'd never heard before my surgery, like upper pole, and you know, the shape of the breast affects all this stuff. Brian, you don't know it, you like an upper pole, just so you know.
Yeah, sounds like
that top part.
If I might, Gina, just for the audience's edification, what did you start off at and where did you end up at?
Are you kidding me?
I don't know what that means.
Do you think I'm going to just be like, well...
You literally just said you're an open book now more than 15 minutes ago.
It's so funny. The only thing I've never taught... I don't give you a numerical number of my weight right. on the scale. Right. And you'll never know my bra size unless you go to the donation center where I dropped all that shit off.
Do they have to invent new letters to measure your previous, like, was it like Greek letters, like where you're an omega?
Correct. They went to Roman numerals. I was an XXVCI. Sure. But I will tell you, I probably went down 5 or 6 cup sizes.
Damn.
For real.
Well done. Yeah. Dr. Elise.
Yeah, Dr. Ben. So yeah. I know we're talking about boobs, which I could do all day, and I know Brian could, but that's not all you do, right?
No, I do. Essentially, a board certified plastic surgeon we've trained to operate from head
boring.
To toe.
Boring.
I know.
No, Brian, it goes farther south. So you just
know. I'm joking around.
So breast and body is what I do a lot of. So that also includes kind of the liposuctions, the tummy tucks, even labiaplasties. And there are other, you know, plastic surgeries that are also included in it that I won't bore you guys with.
Yeah, he just wants to hear about breast reduction and labor.
No, actually, speaking of your Instagram feed, your Play-Doh explanations are fantastic. I don't know if other plastic surgeons do that.
I'm going to say
corner the market on this. In fact, I have a recommendation, which is Play-Doh. It obviously doesn't, as far as I know, Play-Doh doesn't mimic like the human skin that much. You should do like kinetic sand or something that cuts a little more easily, because then you can really, I'm not joking, you can really illustrate these things, like, you know, without, like, you know, digging through Play-Doh. Like when you were doing your labiaplasty on Play-Doh, I got the idea, but it was somewhat gruesome to see, like, digging through like all this Play-Doh.
She does blepharoplasties too with Play-Doh. I think necessity is the mother of invention. When you have kids in the house, you grab the Play-Doh, right?
That's right. That's a good point.
And
yes,
yeah, a lot of those, she says, like, please put down your sandwich if you're going to hear this,
because I appreciated that.
Grotesque. Dr. Min, I, as you know, from, I hope you blocked it out. I didn't, from dealing with my debridement, Don't Google it if you don't know what it is. You are not a squeamish person in any way. I don't know if you remember this the way I do, but Dr. Min had to like Caesar Milan me and be like, hey, stop it.
Hold
like,
on.
Get with the game.
Yeah, poke you.
Because I was so scared to do this myself. And she's like, you're going to have to start doing this yourself. I'm like, okay, tears. And then she's like, hey, now stay with me. This is happening. And I was like, oh, okay. Dr. Min's getting serious. I'm getting serious. So you are not squeamish. It sounds like you'll stick your hand in just about any orifice. Is there anything that grosses you out?
Generally, roses? Not as much, I would say. But when you said I'm not very squeamish, I did hear that like 10 years ago when I was doing a vulsed ear laceration repair in the emergency room. And it was a big trauma bay at the Harborview Medical Center in Seattle where multi-vehicle collisions, like bear mauling patients are coming in. And there was a patient who was actually undergoing active code blue where somebody's heart stops beating. And then there's like a team of doctors around trying to save the patient's life. And my patient who had just an avulsed ear happened to be sitting next to that area with just one curtain between the two spaces. So all of this is happening and he's just like, what is happening next door? Like, this is kind of crazy. And I'm just like, oh, just coding. They're just helping the patient as I'm like tearing away his ear to coming that was half falling off to putting it back on. And later on, he told one of my friends like, man, that doctor, she is just, she doesn't mess around.
That cool was as a funny. Cucumber. So you've always been like this. So you knew that going into medicine was obviously a choice for you.
Yeah, I guess I never thought like blood was particularly gross. My sister gets really easily grossed out. But for me, it's like, okay, whatever. But this is random, but I did get grossed out one time. I was eating beef, like kebab. And there was an area where there was like a vein, artery, and nerve all cooked into like one like area. I'm like, oh my gosh, that actually looks like anatomic piece. And I was so grossed out. So I was grossed out that day.
Wow. Just my lunch. Amazing.
I'm glad that Dr. Elise mentioned code blue, because when I was a newbie in the medical system as a patient, of course, I was sitting around one day and all of a sudden I hear code black. And I'm like, is that bad? That sounds really bad. And the doctor was like, no, code blue is bad. Code black is not that bad. I was like, oh, well, I learned something today.
What is code black?
Some sort of lesser. I mean, it's still, you know, worth announcing. Old Dr. Elise can probably tell us.
Different codes, my understanding is it's different per hospital. So blue is pretty universal. It's somebody who's lost pulse and is in very dire critical condition. And we have code blue teams who come and congregate to help that patient. But there are different codes like code. I don't know. There are codes where like there's a missing child in the hospital.
Sure.
Right. They have as a joke in operating rooms, we say there's a code brown when somebody had a bowel movement as we're getting them out of the stretcher to like the OR table or something. Those are just unofficial codes, but every hospital has different code color to designate whatever is happening.
Do me a favor, if that happened to me, just never tell me.
Okay. Exactly.
I mean, you may have been intimating it, but just don't tell me.
Oh, yeah. Okay, two questions, if I may.
Ahead.
Well, I'll just ask one because you mentioned it before. How often do you deal with the breast reduction with someone who's pregnant, going to be pregnant, probably not pregnant at the time, going to be pregnant, and how does that affect breastfeeding?
Yeah, no, great question. So I have essentially a lot of women undergoing the breast reduction surgery at different points in a woman's life. I have as young as teenagers to people in their 20s with, you know, I would like to have children in the future, but I don't have a partner yet kind of situation, to people who are like, oh, I'm actively breastfeeding. When can I get my breasts reduced? To patients who are in their 50s and they're like, I've had these large breasts for such a long time. I finally have time to do it. So with all of that, the breastfeeding abilities is thankfully something positive news for a lot of the women who are getting it done before having children. Because I am keeping the blood supply, a lot of them behind to keep the nipples alive, they're still up to about 70% chance of being able to breastfeed after the breast reduction. Now, this doesn't include the women, there's about 10% of women who just cannot breastfeed and they're born that way.
Sure.
That we
they're
can't
blame
help
you.
That population. Yeah. So that 10% is whether you have surgery or not, you wouldn't know until you try to breastfeed. But for patients who are able to, who had the surgery done, there is up to 70% chance they would.
All right. We've talked a bunch about, you know, like expectation in terms of like breast size and things like that. Are there other things that you can think of that are big misconceptions about plastic surgery? Just in general, people come in and you're like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Mm-hmm. Great question. I get a lot of moms who come in and they have now little ones and they have priorities that are like, you know, I need to be alive for these kids. Mm-hmm. And there is sort of fear that they have legitimately so of anesthesia. I've never had surgery before. Is this something I could die from? Like, mm-hmm. then isn't it all vanity that I'm trying to sign up for this surgery to feel a little bit more confident when I could potentially go through something that could possibly kill me? Kind of situation, very mm-hmm. legitimate question. And I do explain to them, you know, anesthesia, the general anesthetic experience today in 2024 is so advanced, and the patients coming in for elective surgeries are usually kind of the healthiest population right. who could be getting general anesthesia. Right. And in hospitals, we truly have people who are not anesthetic candidates, really, that we right. still operate on to save their lives and make their cancers go away. So that's how I try to kind of let them know to say, hey, it's not about just life or death. And right. in terms of, it's not about vanity. It's about just feeling confident. And that's kind of a misconception people have sometimes is plastic surgery. If I want it, does that mean I'm vain? And yes. I would have to say,
I'm agreeing with you. I'm not answering that question.
Yeah. In that it's really about confidence. Every woman at different points of life, whether you've had kids or not, can always feel like I could feel a little bit more confident about my body if some of this were a little bit changed. And that's not really vanity. It's about just living life to your fullest.
I totally agree, because I had rhinoplasty in my early 20s. And that was a huge decision, especially coming from the Midwest. In like, when we grew up, it was like unheard of. And who do you think you are? And you think you're better than blah, blah, blah. And when I moved to New York, I was like, oh, should I do it? And I was so afraid that people would judge me or that I wouldn't look like my family. And what am I saying? That my family doesn't look the way I want to look? I mean, I was so, you know, I was riddled with guilt. And I did it and I was like, oh, that's still me. That's still my face. I just now it's like everything's opened up a little bit and I'm a little more confident. And you're absolutely right. Like nobody holds it against you, because frankly, nobody cares, because they're worried about their own life. This is not something that I think most people are judged for, unless you're going so over the top that it's just very noticeable and, you know, people have questions.
Right.
Which,
well, Dr. Min, so I know this is not your area of specialty, but answer this for really everyone listening. Where do we stand on hair restoration? Have we mastered that? Is that something that is viable or still, you know, patchy, as it were?
He's asking for a friend.
Yeah, yeah. I get a lot of emails.
So hair restoration, I mean, we've come a long way from, let's say, like 20, 30 years ago. Sure. But it is one of those things where there is a point of no return for hair restoration.
God damn.
So like early on, and my husband, we talk about this, actually, he's kind of past the point of no return. And we had this conversation together. And early on, it can happen. But after a certain point, it's sort of like there's really still no good solution. And whoever invents that to be a cure would be that would be amazing.
That makes sense, because you're transplanting hair from one part of your head to another part of your head.
Correct.
So this comes up in our house too. So that's a very, that makes
imagine
sense.
It would. Oh, yeah. Again, I know this is not your expertise, but now I'm fascinated. Face transplant surgery, like for like burn victims, the poor woman who's the chimp, you know, tore off her face. This is obviously not perfected, but we've made advances. Yeah. This is like sort of almost viable. Where do we stand on this?
Absolutely. I actually did my general surgery residency at the hospital that kind of started the first face transplant,
wow,
which was
random.
Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. It's a Harvard hospital. And I took care of some of the post-op patients when I was an intern. And it is a fascinating, fascinating surgery of the kind of what we can do in modern medicine. It's still rare, I would say. It's really hard to screen for the perfect candidates for these procedures. And it goes through not only kind of, are they clinically medically ready, but are they also mentally? Exactly. And anytime you undergo a transplant of any part of the body, face or internal organs, you are on immunosuppressants for the rest of your life. And that can, that in itself is also very challenging too. That face transplant, totally. It's very humbling to see these things happen in our lives and just undergoing through it. So it's great.
It's a good step in the right direction, but we ain't done yet.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, and speaking of that, this is something that I'd never heard of before you. Now I feel like a near expert. And I don't know if you recommend this to everyone. You recommended it for me, was the hyperbaric chamber after surgery. And at first I was like, this isn't a thing. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, this is a thing. Can you explain what that is?
Yes. So hyperbaric oxygen therapy is what it is. Essentially, we have oxygen we breathe in regular room air, and these therapies require you to go into a chamber where they're blowing extra concentration of oxygen molecules into what you're breathing. And they kind of grade it to medical grade pressure to non-medical grade. And it's really the medical grade pressure hyperbaric oxygen therapy that we speak of in medicine to have actual clinical effect. So as you're just sitting there breathing in, breathing out, that extra high concentration of oxygen gets grabbed by your blood cells and it gets deposited all over your body. And for patients who just had surgery, you're going to need extra kind of oxygen, extra nutrition and parts of healing. And that can really boost it and make the healing go faster and more efficiently.
It was so crazy, Brian. I don't know if you've done this in any of your leisure time. But wait,
I have not, but this is just yes or no. This is adjacent to blood doping. Yeah, for like Lance Armstrong or whoever, like getting more oxygen into the cells.
Say that again about blood
doping. It's adjacent to like blood doping. Like essentially you're getting more oxygen into your cells for faster athletic recovery. You're talking, of course, about surgical recovery or whatever.
So in the concept of, yes, similar in that, yes, yes.
Okay, so with the Jason, it's not the exact same thing, but obviously
it's kind of similar. Like a lot of things we do that we kind of inject into like platelet-rich plasma, like a lot of things we're injecting into our bodies to help with the efficiency. So an oxygen in itself has its own little mechanism of how it's helping, and these are different injectables, whatever. But yes, everything is trying to like boost your regular immune function to help with the healing.
Oh, and it feels crazy because you crawl into this little tank and they have them kind of all over the city, depending on where you go. Sometimes, I know someone who sat basically in like a bus. You sit like with other people in a room and you put your little mask on. But I did, you know, the independent one and I thought it felt like you're going to space. Oh no, underwater.
It sounds like a suicide pact. I went in a bus just like breathing in the same vapors.
With the same outfit on. And
hose leading from the exhaust.
It is crazy. You can't have any hairspray in or electrical things.
Oh, sure, sure.
You know, oxygen-rich environment.
Yeah, of course.
And so they say, like, what do you want to watch? I'm like, well, how do I do that? And they just slap an iPad in front of your little portal. And I watched Schitt's Creek and tried not to freak out. But it was really cool. I got used to it. And some people fall asleep. I wasn't one of them. But it's very, very cool. And I'd never heard of it. I don't know if this is true because this was told to me by somebody and I should have looked it up. But that it's possible, I guess, that these were created or at least at first used on firefighters that would like come out of like a fire situation and have to get the oxygen in quickly as opposed to having all that other crud in their lungs, which makes sense if it's true.
Yes, that's correct.
Sweet.
All right, Dr. Mann, I feel like we're friends at this point. So I'm going to put you on the spot. Get a real answer, please.
Oh boy.
Give us your skin lotion and face lotion recommendations. Go.
Oh my gosh. Skin lotion, it's kind of embarrassing. I have a 1-year-old right now and I have 2 kids. So I don't have a lot of time when I get home to do a very elaborate skincare at the moment. So I'm using like a Whole Foods organic Babo like baby cream for my body that I put on my baby on me.
Good.
Great.
I think people want to hear like, oh no, you can use like the Whole Foods like store brand.
Oh my gosh. Sometimes I put it even on my face, and this is kind of embarrassing to admit publicly, but I sometimes put that on my face at the end of the night. And I'm like, well, at least I wash my face and I put moisturizer on my face before I fall asleep versus falling asleep with makeup on. So
yeah. I think her her skincare secret is genetics and post-pregnancy glow.
Sure. I know you're not a dermatologist, but you know about these things. You obviously recommend certain creams for procedures, post-op, et cetera, et cetera.
Definitely, yes. And I would say the main important thing is, one, keeping it clean. And, you know, even within the cleaning world, there's like, oh, this is what you want to do for oil-based and water-based cleansing first. So if you can do all of that and you have time to do that, by all means. But basic principles are cleanse. And then afterwards, you really do want to just at nighttime and daytime, it's different. So at nighttime, you just want to put something that's moisturizing for your face and then go to bed. Lots of water to hydrate. That's important too. Not just what you put on, but also what you put inside your body. And then in the morning, you have to kind of prepare for the sun exposure you're going to get and the sun damage you're going to get to the face. So after you wash it, some people don't wash their face the morning after because you've kind of cleansed it.
I don't.
Or, and that's totally fine. And some people would put some toner to balance the pH of the face. Again, that's like necessary or not, you can decide. And then you could put some serum that you need for your face. And one of the common thing would be vitamin C that really helps with the antioxidant damage that you get from the sun to your skin that helps protect and help with the healing there. So you want to put the serums you need for your specific skin needs.
Right.
And then you want to put your moisturizer skin on top of that. And importantly, you have to finish it with sunscreen. And generally, dermatologists will say SPF 50 and above would be best.
Oof. Yeah, not that SPF 2 that we used to use with the oil, the cocoa oil and just lime juice. Oh, that was the sparkly stuff in the bottle. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Dr. Min, we cannot thank you enough. And I feel like we just scratched the surface. We need to get to the fascia next time or I don't know, whatever's under the surface. What would you say, just to round things out, to somebody who's considering some sort of plastic surgery but is too scared to take the first step?
Great question. I mean, I think they should also recognize they're not alone in that thought process. A lot of people feel scared. It is surgery. It is somebody cutting, and that in itself is a scary experience, just even thinking about it. I think as simple as just kind of Googling and seeing what's out there near them. I think it's important also not to get lost in the Google searches of what people are talking about, because you will find whatever you want to read on either sides of yes, go for it, to no, don't go for it, depending on where you fall.
Confirmation bias, yeah.
Exactly. General information, get it from sort of just online search, and then try to find friends who've had similar procedures and get local referrals of who were good reputable surgeons that they worked with, and then actually go talk to them. And each surgeon may have a little different flavor of what they want to focus on and advise on, but that's also very important in being able to see, okay, do I think I can undergo plastic surgery? And two, do I trust my surgeon to kind of take me through that journey and get me safe on the other side?
Well said. And I will tell you now that I researched many and had many consultations before my surgery. And I just was like, Dr. Min, I don't know, something about her. I trust her. I'm going under with this one. So it was just, I just found you. I'm so grateful. And thank you personally. And thank you on behalf of our listeners. And I hope we can do this again, because I'm sure we're going to get flooded with listener questions after this.
Thank you so much for having me. It's all, once I met you as a patient, I'm like, I love Gina. So essentially, I saw her more often because I like seeing her. And I'm like, come on in.
It was fun. I was there a lot.
Another post-op visit. All right.
Yeah, do you do 2-year post-op? I'll come down if you want.
Oh my gosh, I'll do a 10-year post-op for you.
Thank you so much. And again, your Instagram is your name, right? Is at Dr. Elise Min.
Yes.
Perfect. Definitely feel free to reach out to her there, but watch the Play-Doh videos. They are eye-opening.
They're edifying. Yeah, for sure.
And of course, you can find us at Gina Grad at Bald Brian on the socials. Write a nice little constructive compliment to us online. Rate it with a nice 5-star review and like our stuff and tell your friends. It's free and it helps us a lot. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Brian and Gina Show. To get in touch with the hosts or buy their books, hit them up at Bald Brian and at Gina Grad on Twitter and Instagram, or by email at podcasts@lamag.com. To get connected with LA Magazine, hit them up at LA Mag on Twitter and Instagram. Talk soon.